Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 110. I'm recording it on Saturday, March 14th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 12. That's a bit below fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of this selection is Awesome Call. The title of the podcast is The How-To of Valuation-Informed Indexing. I have a few of the podcast titles are based on titles for articles at the site, and this is one of those. I have an article at the site in the Valuation-Informed Indexing section of the site, The How-To of Valuation-Informed Indexing. And I didn't even look at the article before doing the podcast because I remember when I wrote the article, I wasn't happy with it. So this is going to be a different stab at it. And the way I deal with questions like this, questions that keep popping up, is I jump out and I take a stab at it, whether it's writing an article or writing a post or recording a podcast. And if I'm happy with what comes out, I stick with that. And if I'm not happy, I circle back at a later time and see if I can do a better job. So I recall not being real happy with that article. Go ahead and read it if you like. But certainly didn't address the problem in any final sort of way. It may have had something in there of value, but it didn't impress me anyway. A couple things caused me to be focused on this question again. One is my good friend Artie. He's a poster in our community and one of the best. And he put up Artie wears you out. He goes away for a long time and you don't see him and you miss him. And then he comes back and he puts up 50 posts in a week. But, you know, I think he's on vacation or something. So a lot of those posts were wonderful, though. Some of the best posts we've seen. So it was great stuff. If you want to check out Artie's post this week, go to the blog. You have to go to PassionSaving.com and then look on the left-hand side and you'll see a button for A Rich Life. That's the blog. Go to the blog, and when you get to the blog, there's a search box. Put in this month's permanent portfolio, and that'll bring up a blog entry where Artie put up a whole bunch of posts. And then there's another blog entry where he put up a bunch of posts. That's the more recent one. Today is Saturday, the March 14th. It was the blog entry that went up on Thursday, March 12th, that had a lot of stuff by Artie. So look there. And but Artie had he's trying to help. He's a believer. Valuation informed indexing. It's like a religion. You gotta convert. You gotta convert. Because passive investing is a religion. It shouldn't be a religious question. It should just be a question of different people getting together and talking about different investing ideas. That's sure what I thought it was when I first started building up the Retire Early Board at Motley Fool. But I learned that passive investing, the dominant school of today, is a religion. It's dogma. Can't question any of the dogmas or you'd be branded a heretic. So Artie is a heretic. And he's trying to help spread the new religion. And he said to me something. He said to me, Rob, you need something that you tell people about the importance of valuations. And that makes all the sense in the world. People understand that when they buy a car or a house or a comic book or a banana, they have to look at price. So that makes sense. The idea of looking at the price of the stocks you buy makes sense. And you use PE10 to tell people, you know, when to buy stocks, when not to buy stocks, how much stocks to buy at any particular time. So that makes sense. That's your price tag. But what people need is simple instructions what to do. So if the P10 level is 12 like it is today, well, what do they do? Or if the P10 level is 18, what do they do? Or if the P10 level is 24, what do they do? Or if the P10 level is 6, what do they do? You have to tell people what do they do? What are they supposed to do? That's what's missing. And it's not just Artie who thinks that. Artie, I actually broke down, and I'm not sure if I broke down in a final way or not, but I actually broke down. Artie made such a good case, and what he did was he actually went to the trouble to do a little mock-up. He did a little mock-up, and it was a little chart, and he said, you know, P10 level here, and then, you know, what your allocation should be here, you know, he says you can change if you don't agree with the numbers I put in, change, you know. But he just made it look nice, and I said, yeah, that does look nice, and you know, maybe that would help people. I sort of broke down and said, look, I have to do this. I've been thinking about it, and I'm going to have to break down and do it. And the reason why I think about it is Artie is not the only one who thinks this. I, you know, it's the most popular question I get in emails. Is they say, this is interesting. This site is interesting. What do I do? This is what people want to know. And it sure is a reasonable question. Sure is a reasonable question. So it's, why don't I do that? I've got 100 articles on investing. I've got 110 podcasts. I've got 4 calculators. Why don't I break down and tell people what to do? Wouldn't that help? There's a part of me, I want to help people and I want to tell them what to do, but there's a part of me that resists. And the reason I resist is rational investing is different. Valuation-informed indexing is a strategy. When you're contrasting valuation-informed indexing, you should contrast that with passive indexing or conventional indexing. It's a different strategy, superior strategy in my view. Different though. It's indexing, but it's indexing where you don't stay with the same stock allocation. But valuation-informed indexing is a strategy under the rational investing model of understanding how stock investing works, whereas conventional indexing is a strategy under the passive investing model of understanding how stock investing works. So when you make this shift from conventional indexing to valuation-informed indexing, you're not just changing a strategy, you're changing a model. You're changing your whole worldview of how stocks work. This is what I think some don't grasp. This is why they ask this question about what are the particulars? How do I do this? And the idea of listing PE10 levels and then saying what allocation you should be at, that idea is a passive investing idea. It's a passive way of thinking about stock investing. So I'm in a jam. When people ask me this question, they're jamming me up. They're asking about a rational strategy, and they're asking me to explain it using the language of passive investing. And it doesn't translate. I'm going to try to explain. The purpose of this podcast is to explain what I mean by that. But it's a problem. The question is a reasonable one, but we of course need to tell you what to do. There has to be a how-to of valuation-informed indexing, obviously. But the how-to of valuation-informed indexing is not going to follow the same rules as the how-to of conventional indexing, because it's a different model. So you're just going to have to, I don't know, have a little patience or a little understanding until that clicks. And when that clicks, we can talk about the how-to. It's an important subject, but I can't go down the list and say PE 10 12 60% allocation, PE 10 18 30% allocation, PE 10 6 90% allocation. It doesn't work like that. I can't do it. If I do it, I'm lying. I have an analogy. I think it's a very good analogy. Some people are going to react to it badly. But my personal opinion, and I've been doing this for 7 years, every day. My personal opinion is that this analogy hits it on the head, the difference. Say that we're talking about romantic relationships. Rob's favorite analogies all have to do with romantic relationships. All right. You're a 16-year-old boy. Okay? And let's say you're a socially inept 16-year-old boy. You're not a bad boy. You're just socially inept. Okay? It's been known to happen. It's been known to happen. And, you know, you're socially inept, but you're, you know, you've got those same physical urges that the socially apt and the socially inept fall prey to. So, you have a certain desire to enjoy the company of 16-year-olds of the other sex. And 16-year-olds of the other sex, you know, the ones that you are drawn to are the more socially apt ones. So you're not really drawn to the socially inept ones might think you're groovy, but the socially apt ones aren't so sure. So that's one little problem. And as a general rule, I think this is generally thought to be so. Girls mature, I don't mean physically, they mature emotionally more quickly than boys. So the 16-year-old girls that you're drawn to are, you know, they're a little more on top of things than you are. So, you know, and of course you've had some bad experiences, you know, you've had this experience where you work up the courage to, you know, say those dreadful words, which you like to dance, and, you know, the person you asked, you know, started staring at the floor and, you know, sort of shaking her head a little bit. So that made it worse. So anyway, you got a little bit of a problem. So there are people, there are companies, you know, in this consumer wonderland of ours, there are people who devote their energies to solving these sorts of problems. How kind, how nice. They work overtime. They hire big companies. They're multi-billion dollar outfits. It's called the porn industry. Right? So they create a product that, you know, all sorts of people buy, but it's aimed right at that 16-year-old socially inept boy. So you consume some of the product of the porn industry. I'm going to tie this to investing. You just wait. You'll see. Don't you doubt me now. So you consume some of the product. And there's a whole language. There's a whole way of thinking. Okay? I can't tell you how I know this. I research things, you know. I research things. So there are people who have filled me in on some of these details. You know, in the interest of science. But there is a language. There's a way of thinking that is characteristic of this industry, the product of this industry. I'm not going to go into detail here. It would be wrong, as President Nixon assured us. It would be wrong. It's one of my favorite quotes. I could do that, but it would be wrong. That one and the one, just to be nonpartisan about it, that one and the one when Carter, they sent some helicopters to some place in the desert and they all blew up or something. He said it was, that mission was an incomplete success. Those are two of my favorites of all time. It was an incomplete success and I could do it, but it would be wrong. I never forget these things. All right. Okay. So there's a language, and I'll sum it up. It can all be summed up, that language, the way of thinking, the porn way of thinking. 36, 24, 36. These are the perfect measurements, you know. Now, is it true that 36, 24, 36 are good measurements? They're some kind of ideal, you know, to aspire to, some sort of model. Well, I guess, you know, hourglass figure, this is what they call it, the hourglass figure. So when you see this porn, you know, it's implicit everywhere that this is what it's all about. You know, it's about 36, 24, 36. I mean, there's other things they get into, but the point is, you're taking a woman, and a 16-year-old girl is on the verge of being a woman, and a woman is like, you know, a woman is scary. A woman's got all these traits. She's like, you know, some of them similar to yours, just enough of them similar to yours so that you can imagine spending time with her, but then just enough different from yours that it's scary as all get out to do so. And she's got intelligence, and she's got kindness, and she's got aspirations, she's got ambition, she's got stubbornness, she's got, you know, some of the bad ones you've got, she's got goofiness, she likes the Grateful Dead, or she likes Miles Davis. You know, this is this awesome thing, this idea of speaking to this creature. And she's got measurements. You know, all women have measurements, you know. This is, in other words, the idea that women have measurements is not a lie exactly. It's true. It's technically true. The lie is the suggestion, which is endemic to porn, that all a woman is her measurements. That's the lie. Now, why do people tell such a lie, such an obvious lie? Everybody knows it's a lie. Everybody who has a brain knows this. Because it's a comforting lie. You gotta comb your hair, and you gotta, in the old days you would put on a tie, but I suppose nowadays not too many put on ties, but you got to comb your hair anyway. Put on a clean pair of jeans, maybe. And you got to talk to this creature. And we all know how it goes. You got to talk about those Miles Davis albums. You got to talk about, Hill Street Blues or whatever it is today. Law and Order. I don't know what it is. You got to talk about, you know, the economic crisis. You got to talk about these things, and those measurements are always somewhere in the back of your mind. So, okay, let's flip back now to the how-to evaluation informed indexing. Why do people believe in passive investing? There's this podcast number 110, and I don't think there's one of them yet that hasn't said the words passive investing is the dumbest idea in the history of planet Earth at some point or other in the proceedings. So why do people believe in passive investing, given how dumb it is and how dangerous it is and how much destruction it has caused through the course of human history? Why do people believe in the idea that you don't have to change your stock allocation when prices get to insanely dangerous levels? Smart people. The 16-year-old boy is smart. He's socially inept. That doesn't mean he's not smart. Sometimes the smart ones are the most socially inept. No? Bill Gates? Did you ever see that picture? There's a picture of Bill Gates. I don't know. I think he's about 20. And he's with his buddies, you know? And I mean, you know, if you want a picture for the dictionary to put next to the dictionary definition of dork, you know, do a search for this picture. You'll find it. If you search in Google, I'm sure, photo of Bill Gates, you know, looking like a dork, you'll find it. Is he the richest man in the world or something today? So just because you're socially inept doesn't mean you're not intelligent. So why do all these intelligent people believe in this idiotic idea that you don't need to look at valuations? You don't need to change your stock allocation in response to price changes. How did this stupid, stupid, stupid idea ever catch on? It caught on for the same reason porn caught on. Because it takes a complicated subject. It's, you know, learning how to talk to a woman, learning how to interact with a woman, and reduces it. You know, learning how to invest your money. Now, again, when I say complicated, it's not that complicated. We all do figure out, well, most of us, except for the psycho killers, we all do eventually figure out how to talk with actual living, breathing women, right? Right? Bill Gates grew up and got married, and so did all his followers, and so did Rob Bennett. God bless him. Not without some trips and stumbles along the way. But eventually, you know, I one of the thoughts I had when I got married, it took me a long time, and I should have gotten married. I wish I'd gotten married earlier, in that I prefer married life, but I'm glad I didn't, in that I married the right person, and I suppose if I had gotten married earlier, I wouldn't have. But one of the things I thought when I got married, you know, you think this, you say, well, I'm giving up, you know, freedom, you know, I'm giving up this and that. What I most didn't want to give up was meeting new people. That was the part that hurt the most. That I mean, not that you can't meet new people when you're married, but it's, you know, it is different. You can't just, you can't see a new person and say, hey, let's have dinner. And I like that. That's my favorite thing about being single, was just that you could, you know, you had some awful dates, you know, we all have had an awful date, but even some of the awful ones, you sometimes learn something, truth be told, and the good ones were great, and even if they didn't go anywhere, if the person didn't like you and it didn't go anywhere, you got to see a different mind at work, and so that's the thing that most hurt. But you know, but when I was thinking of this, when I was getting married, I was trying to pull the thought back, but I sort of lost the thought. But it was something along those lines, that when I got married, I was thinking, you know, that's what I'm giving up. But the point is, you know, I missed the exact point. I lost the exact point there. But I got it. One of the thoughts I had in favor of getting married, I remember going through this pro and con list. It's so idiotic, of course, but we're idiots, you know. We're idiots, babe. Like Dylan said, we're idiots, babe. It's a wonder we can even feed ourselves. One of the thoughts in my head was, don't tell me I lost it again. This is pathetic. This is truly pathetic. I said, something like, I won't have to, when you get married, you won't have to, my thought was that when you get married, you won't have to do this thing anymore. What was the thing? I can't remember what the thing was. Was it, I think it was just this struggle with you know, all the insecurity and stuff, you know, when you meet somebody. In other words, there is this, say, I love the part when you would connect. In other words, you'd be sitting at dinner and you'd sort of connect on some subject. And that part I just love. But there is this sort of game, you know, of, you know, why am I asking you out? I mean, see, I'm sort of sensitive to, I think, emotional interplay. And so, you know, what does it mean? You know, all these things have significance. You know, you ask somebody out, and if it's a big event, does it mean something? And, you know, because I would always ask people on dates, and it would be these expensive dates, and it didn't mean anything in particular. It just meant that I'd like to go to jazz clubs, and they're expensive, and I'd be desperate to find somebody to ask, and it didn't really mean that, you know, anything in particular about that person. So you had all this double meanings. Double meanings, that's what I'm saying. When I got married, I said, I'll be glad to put all the double meaning stuff behind me. In other words, my wife, she knows the score. You know, she knows what an idiot I am, so I don't have to pretend anymore. I'm just an open idiot. And then I had to sort of pretend I was an idiot, and everybody knew I was an idiot, but I had to act like I didn't know I was an idiot, and she had to act like she didn't know I was an idiot. And I was just glad to put that behind me. I was glad to be an open idiot, and you know, I wish I'd become an open idiot earlier in life, but such, you know. I'm glad, though, that I waited for the perfect idiot to marry me. So, all right. So, but the point is, dating is this stupid thing where the purpose is profound, you know? I mean, they call it the facts of life. The purpose is profound. You're going to meet someone, and we all know this, you know, when you just say, hey, you know, you feel like going for coffee, it sounds so casual, but the implication is if you know, if a fire gets started, you might marry this person, which means you might end up having kids with this person, and there's going to be all these people running around years later that look like you, a mix of the two of you and your parents. And it all started because you were in the mood for a cup of coffee and you wanted some company. So, you know, this is human life. It's this combination of the significant and the insignificant, you know, the significant and the trivial. And it's all sort of mixed together in a bundle. And nothing brings that out like dating, in my view. And investing, stock investing. So what happens with stock investing is it's an act of great significance. Where you choose to put your money is going to determine a lot of us. If you trace it back, you know, somebody should do a study on this. Trace it back. Maybe they have. How much, you know, say at the end of your life, say you die at 90. Go back and find out how many of the dollars that ultimately came into your life over the course of a lifetime came in as the result of work effort. And compare that with the number of dollars that came in as the result of investing. And I bet in a lot of cases, I don't know. I mean, it might be more 50-50, or it might be more of them came in through investing. That would be a great thing to study. It's hard, I guess. There's a lot of factors. But the point is, if you invest well, your life is going to be richer in 100 different ways than if you invest poorly. So everybody knows this. On some level of consciousness. So when you make this decision, you know, is my allocation going to be 40% or 50% or 80% or 10%? You're making a decision of great significance. It's like asking a girl to dance, or it's like asking a girl for coffee. That's what you're doing. It's great. It's a great significance. But you're scared because it's of great significance, and you know that you don't know the right thing to do. You know you're a goof up. You know, we all know ourselves. We may lie to others, but on some level, we know. So you tell yourself, you try to simplify it. You try to make it crude, so that the significance doesn't weigh on you. So you say, oh, 36, 24, 36. Of course, I asked her out, or. You know, not 36, 24, 36. So, of course, I didn't ask her out. You know, you stupefy it. You take something of great complexity and beauty and reduce it to an idiotic number. And it's not literally untrue. It's just dumb. It's dumbness. You know, concentrated dumbness. And that's what people are doing when they say, what should your allocation be at a PE 10 of 12? It's dumbness. And I want to answer their question. There are things I can tell you. When you tell me the PE 10 level is 12, there are things that that means. But I can't reduce it to a number. I can't say 20% allocation or 60% allocation or 80% allocation. That dumbifies the whole thing. And that's passive investing. Passive investing is a dumbification of the investing process. It's all about making it dumb, not making it simple. What they'll defend themselves by saying, oh, we're making it simple. People don't understand. People understand how to ask a woman on a date. People get that. We wouldn't be here if people didn't get that. But they're scared of it. And so we tell them this lie that they don't need to change their stock allocation in response to price changes because it's a comforting lie. It just dumbnifies the whole thing. And I want to undumbnify it. That's why the model's called rational. That's the whole point. So yes, I am perfectly happy to give thoughts on the meaning of a PE 10-12, but I'm not willing to dumbnify it. I'm not willing to say that means an allocation of 60%. So I resist that trap. And it causes communication problems because we have, you know, millions have read all this passive stuff. And they're saying, what? You gotta give a dumb answer, Rob. That's what investing experts do. They all give dumb answers. Why don't you give a dumb answer? And I'm saying, well, I don't feel like being dumb. I'm tired of being dumb. Being dumb makes you poor. I don't want to be dumb. I want to be smart. I'm not saying I always do it. I'm not saying I achieve that goal. I'm saying that's my goal. That's my aim. And they're saying, sorry, Rob, you have to be dumb. You want to talk about investing, don't you? If you don't want to be dumb, talk about something else. You're allowed to be smart talking about baseball, and you're allowed to be smart talking about Bob Dylan. You're allowed to be smart talking about furniture, but you can't be smart talking about investing, Rob. You know that. It's not the way it's done, Rob. None of the experts, they're all dumb. Can't you be dumb like them? You could learn if you practice, Rob. You can learn. You can just take it step by step, and you can become dumb too. You can give dumb investing advice. I'm sure you can, Rob. You just try. You just try now. That's my life. Trying not to be dumb and having massive pressures imposed on me to be dumb all the time, and I'm sick of it. And I'm sick of the pain it causes people. So if I was talking to that 16-year-old boy, you know, I wouldn't be handing him porn magazines. I would be, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, I'd say he has to get away. Maybe he has to get away from the porn stuff. In other words, it's perfectly healthy that he has the desire for the physical, you know, connection. That's normal and healthy, and there's nothing wrong with it. But he's got to rein that in, is the way I would put it. He's got to say, hey, you know, instead of looking for a 36-24-36, which is what the porn is pushing him to, and which of course he achieves in fantasy, not in the real world, to make the shift to the real world, what he's got to do is say, okay, forget 36-24-36. That's dumb stuff. Let's just kick that out. It's there. You know, it's part of the deal. It is there. But let's defocus. So what should he focus on? Well, you know, maybe he's taking a class in calculus, and there's a girl there, and she wears glasses, but, you know, she's pretty good with numbers. She gets higher grades than most of the guys. She's pretty darn good with numbers. And she does wear glasses. That part's true. But when you think about it for 10 seconds, you notice that the glasses look pretty sexy on her. She wears glasses. truth be told, if you let the thought into your head, the non-dumb thought, she's actually kind of hot in a way. You know, we're reining in the hot stuff. We're defocusing. You know, not allowed to say it, but you know, it's there. And she's not totally unhot. Okay, so work with that. You know, you go up to her and you talk to her about calculus or trigonometry, whatever they torture 16-year-olds with nowadays. You talk with her about that. And lo and behold, you know, smart investing is all about probabilities, right? Well, the great truths are true in every area of life endeavor. The probabilities, if you go up to this young lady and you talk to her, you tell her you're impressed with her math abilities. Boy, what do you think? What do you think her reaction is going to be to that instead of you telling her you're impressed with the other, you know, some stupid comment suggesting such. How do you think she's going to react? You know, with her hotness. She, to the extent she's hot, she knows it. She doesn't need to be told by you. But she, you know, it may well be that she takes pride in the calculus stuff, and she'd love to have somebody tell her, especially somebody of the other sex. And even if she doesn't really think you're a possibility, you're probably going to get on her good side, and maybe she'll change her mind. Maybe she'll see that there's a hotness lurking within you that is well hidden. But they're all the same. Well, it works that way with investing, you see. So, you know, we've got to be real. And valuation-informed indexing is real. It's not this BS. It's not porn. It's real. What makes it real? We talk about valuations. Why is that so important? Valuations are the product of the emotional side of investing. Valuations are always emotion, always caused by emotion. Always. If the market were rational, if the market were efficient, prices would be self-regulating. Overvaluation and undervaluation are logical impossibilities in a rational market. Whenever the market is overvalued or undervalued, you know that emotion's at work. That means it's those darn humans again. So if you want to be an effective investor, you don't do it by closing your eyes to all the realities of humans, all the realities of valuations. No, no, no. That's being a pathetic loser, creep, porn addict. You go the other route. You recognize that it's a reality. You recognize that, yes, we all would like to reduce this stuff to numbers. That's the way we're made. But you rein it in. You say, look, I'm not going to be a porn addict 24 hours a day. I'm going to try to rein that side of me in. And yeah, it's there. You know, and maybe it'll come out, you know. Maybe 10 years from now when I meet the appropriate person and we go through the proper procedures, we're introduced by a third party and we attend the proper religious services, perhaps we will allow this part of our personality to evidence itself in actual behavior. But until then, we will rein it in and we will talk about calculus. We will rein it in. Maybe we'll allow ourselves a calculated dance. A dance with calculated steps. So it'll be sort of calculus, sort of the other thing. You know, it's sort of a mid-ground. It's like jazz. You know, it's halfway. Halfway to rock and roll. Halfway between classical and rock and roll, but not so extreme. All right. No, that's the thing. That's the thing. So, I can give tips on what these P10 levels are. Now, here's how to think about it. Say that you wanted to know, when somebody asked me, what does this P10 level today is 12. What's that mean? What's a 12 mean? It's like saying, say that you're a passive investor. This is the equivalent question to a passive investor. What's the right allocation? Now, if you ask John Bogle that, just assume that passive investing worked. Let's just assume that for a second. Would it be fair to go to John Bogle and say, John, what allocation is right, Mr. Passive Investor? And the correct allocation is 47%. Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Bogle. You've solved all my investing problems. If he said such a thing, you would know that he was a moron. He's obviously not going to say such a thing. He's going to say, well, depends. It depends on your life goals. It depends on your financial circumstances. It depends on your risk tolerance. It depends on your age. It depends on all sorts of things. There is no one stock allocation that works for everybody. Well, all that valuation-informed indexing is, it's the same thing as passive indexing, except we acknowledge that valuations affect the result. So why would anyone think that there would be one stock allocation that would work for everybody at any given P10 level? There's not. At a P10 level of 12, there are going to be stock allocations of between X and Y. There's going to be a range, a big range. The range might be 60 percentage points. It might be that the lowest will be 0 and the highest will be, it might be the lowest would be 30 and the highest will be 90. And at a P10 level of 18, there's going to be a range of maybe 60 percentage points. And at a P10 level of 23, there's going to be a range of 60 percentage points. In other words, there is no one answer. There's no one answer under passive investing to what your allocation should be. Well, there's no one answer in valuation-informed indexing to what your allocation should be. It depends on the particulars, your life goals, your financial circumstances, your risk tolerance, your age, all these kinds of things. So none of that changes. So I wish people would stop asking me, what allocation? Now, here's the point, somebody might say, well, then you're just saying the same thing Bogle's saying. Well, what do I need you for? Well, the difference is the same person, if you hold everything else constant and you say, at a P10 level of 12, your allocation is going to be 80%. What's your P10 level at? What's your allocation level at a P10 level of 29? Well, then that would be maybe 10%. In other words, 70% lower, or if we're going to use the 60% range, let's say 20%, 60% lower. The point is, valuations is the most important factor you need to look at in setting your allocation. Passive says it's no factor at all. It doesn't matter. Always go with the same. Rational says, valuation-informed indexing says, always consider valuations. Never give in to that urge not to consider valuations. Never be a knucklehead. That's it. That's the whole difference. But that one difference changes everything. So, you've got to look at valuations. There's all the difference in the world between a P10 level of 12 and a P10 level of 28. We were at about 28 before the stock crash. Now we're at 12. They're like worlds apart. There's no investing strategy that I can tell you about that makes sense both at a P10 level of 12 and at a P10 level of 28. It's like being on different planets. All of the conditions are changed. But that doesn't mean I can give you one allocation for 28 or for 12. There is no one right allocation at any P10 level. So I can't answer the question the way people want me to answer it. What I can do is I can spell out all the factors that you should be thinking about. But that gets people annoyed. They're like, Rob, can you just give us a number for heaven's sake? You know, they say at the Goon Central, tell us your scheme. Tell us your scheme. And there is no scheme. You know, it's like, tell us your scheme, you know, for meeting hot girls. There is no scheme. There's no scheme that works. If you go out on Saturday night thinking that you're going to try a scheme, you're going to end up alone. Or you're going to end up with some girl who's as pathetic as you are in believing in that schemes are the answer. Schemes are not the answer. Real people don't live their life according to schemes. In dating or in investing. Real people who are smart people who haven't been so beaten down by life that they give in to this urge, which we all do have within us to live our lives according to schemes. See, the urge is there. The urge is real. I don't deny that. I'd say resist the urge. Resist passive investing. Everything that makes you want to reduce it to a scheme, that's what hurts you. Stop listening to those voices. Now, I'm just going to read. There was a thread that went up recently at bogleheads.org saying, I forget the name of it, was something like how to use PE10 in practical ways or something like that. Practical use of PE10. And you know, somebody did some kind of graphic thing that showed, you know, that valuation informed indexing is always superior to buy and hold, which it is. And one guy was kind enough, Grey Wolf, was kind enough to say, so Hocus was right. Unbelievable. But then, you know, goons got on and said, no, and, you know, all this gibberish. Obviously, if you're going to allow the goon element to dominate the thread, you're never going to have the discussion you need to have to learn the ins and outs. But somebody quoted something I said at another discussion board, Hocus, you know, I'm Hocus when I post on boards. And I want to read this quote because it sums it up, because you hear all the qualifiers, and it's almost funny. Here's a quote from Hocus. If you force me to give one rule on how to implement valuation-informed indexing, I would say, consider going with a 30% stock allocation when the PE10 value is above 19, a 60% stock allocation down to a PE10 of 12, and a 90% allocation for PE10 values below 12. However, I reserve the right to change those rules as I continue to work the calculators and build new ones and learn more about this approach. This is new to me too, you know. Well, I like the words. I'm proud that I wrote those words a long time ago, because those words say it right. You know, I think those words are good advice if people would take them to heart. But it makes me laugh because I'm not answering. You know, they're saying, what allocation should I be at? You know, we want to do a chart, Rob. We want a chart, and we can't do a chart unless we plug numbers in. And you've got to tell us what PE10 level is a good PE10 level to be highly invested in stocks. We can't check it out without. Well, guess what? You can't check out everything in life. There is no chart. If you want to have a chart that works, it's going to have to be a different chart for every human being. And they're going to have to plug in things like whether they want to move into a bigger house in 5 or 10 years. That's got to be in your chart because that affects your allocation. What they do in passive is they say, you don't need any of this money until you're 65. Let's play a game. Let's pretend we don't need any of the money until we're 65. So you're 25, you don't have to worry what's going to happen for 40 years. Stocks are going to provide a good return in 40 years, which is true. They're right about that one. So you should set your allocation as if you lived in a make-believe world where you don't have to worry about your portfolio for 40 years. You can suffer bone-crushing losses. Makes no difference. You'll make it all up in 40 years. Go with a big stock allocation, friend. Ignore valuations. Dumb, 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 dumb. Doesn't work, ever, can't work. Why can't it work? Why is it so dumb? Because there's no such thing as saying I don't have to worry about it until I'm 65. If you're 25, you might want to buy a house. You might get married when you're 30 and want to buy a house. Move out of the apartment you're renting and buy a house. If you're going to buy a house and take on a big mortgage, you're going to want to know how much you've got in your portfolio. That's going to be a factor. You want to know, what are my financial, you know, how much progress have I made in my financial, you know, working toward financial freedom? And it's going to make all the difference in the world if that portfolio is, you know, $100,000 or $50,000. It's going to make a big difference in what size house you're going to buy, or whether you're even able to buy a house for that matter. So there's no such thing as waiting until you're 65 for your portfolio value to have any significance. It always is significant. It's significant at every single stage of life. 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, 75, 85, all of them. Yes. Yes. Retiring is a significant event. So that is one of the factors you want to look at. What's it going to be when I'm 65? That's a legitimate point, but it's not the only point. And they're teaching us, these so-called experts are teaching us, to ignore all the other factors. And that's why we're in the mess we're in today. Because the other factors matter. It all matters. There's nothing wrong with simplifying. But when you simplify to the point where you get it wrong, you cause more trouble than you save. You make things worse instead of better. You take a happy song and make it sad instead of taking a sad song and making it better. They're playing Hey Jude backwards. When you play it backwards, it says, Paul is a dead man, Paul is a dead man, Paul is a dead man. You gotta stop that. So, you know, there is no... There is no one answer. You got to look at these factors. So you got to be thinking about, this is what all the podcasts are about, and this is what all the articles are about. The point is, and this is what the calculators are about. You know, I'm trying to teach people how to hold more than one thought in their head at the same time. It doesn't have to be that complicated, but it has to be a tiny bit complicated. It has to be a little bit more than, wow, I like her statistics. I like her figure. It's got to be a little deeper than that. Or you're going to spend a lot of your time with boring women. You know, there are very exciting women that have great figures. Lots and lots and lots of them. But if all you look at is the figure, the probabilities are working against you. You're missing out on some great stuff. And if all you're thinking about when you choose your stock allocation is, what will I do in 40 years? Where will I be in 40 years? You're an idiot. You're hurting yourself. Not an intentional idiot. You want to do well, but you've been attracted to a dumb idea, and the idea has successfully dumbified you. I'm trying to de-dumbnify middle-class investors. Trying to de-dumbnify middle-class investors. That's the goal. Now, I'm going to give you an example of how I myself, you know, the one of the great statements I made in that quote that I just read. I said, I'm new to this too. I'm not God. You know, don't come to me and say, Rob, tell us all the answers, because I'm not God. All I ever wanted to do was to have a talk with my friends about how stock investing works. All this other stuff, you know, I was forced into it by gunpoint. You know, I'm trying to save my community from these goons, these thugs. And so I had to go out and build calculators. Those are my weapons. Podcasts and articles and posts. Those are my weapons in defense of the retire early and indexing discussion board communities. I don't fight with, you know, deception and intimidation and this stuff and word games. I fight with calculators and articles and podcasts. That's how the hobbits do it. I'm a hobbit. Hobbit reporter. So I like that quote where I said, I don't know it. Well, here's a great example of how I don't know it. This just hit me last night. I have a calculator coming out. John Walter Russell, his research is the engine. John's site is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. You wanna hear some numbers that aren't porn? go to John's site. He's a numbers guy, but a real-world numbers guy. Numbers guy that includes valuations. Imagine the possibilities. Go there. You might meet a girl with a great figure that knows calculus too. Imagine what this world has to offer us if we just get our thinking straight. It's frightening. Dylan had a line, an idiot win. It's frightening. I don't remember exactly. It's frightening how sweet this life can be. Those are the lines I love, you know, those paradoxes. It's frightening how sweet this life can be. It's frightening, and he's right. It's frightening because we deny ourselves so much with our stupidity, and it, you know, we don't want to face it. Because to face our stupidity means acknowledging how much we've hurt ourselves. It's frightening to think how sweet this life can be. I don't have the line right, but that's the point of it. I'm too worked up at the moment to get the right line. I could do it if I calmed down a bit, but I don't want to. I'm on a roll. I wanted to tell you. So we have this calculator. It's called the Investment Strategy Tester. And the whole point of the Investment Strategy Tester is to answer this sort of question. People say, well, you know, what should my allocation be? With the Investment Strategy Tester, you can go in and you can specify a particular a rule for changing allocations. You could say, well, I'm always going to change my allocation, I'm going to stay with 70% stocks until we go to a P10 level of 20. Then I'm going to 30% stocks. And that's my rule. And I'm going to follow that rule no matter what. And you could stick that in, and the calculator will run 1,000 return sequences that are realistic to what we've seen in the historical record. And then it'll tell you what the odds are of different outcomes. And you can look and you can say, well, I like all those outcomes. Well, if you like them all, that's a great strategy. Or you can say, well, I like 80% of them. Well, that means it's pretty good. The odds are you're going to like the outcome. Or it could say 20% good results and 80% bad. You might say, well, that doesn't sound so hot. That's the whole point of the calculator, is to answer this question that everybody likes to ask me. So what I did was, we have default results. The default results are the results that show up before you put any numbers in the calculator. And that's just for newcomers, you know, so that they know what's going on. And for the default results, I wanted to show people how shifting to valuation-informed indexing, you can make up all the money you lost in the stock crash. So I said, let's compare two portfolios. One is an investor who follows valuation-informed indexing for 30 years, and he has $100,000 to invest today. And he's going to follow a valuation-informed indexing strategy, the strategies I recommend. And the second investor is going to follow passive indexing. But he starts with $150,000, and let's see where they end up at the end of 30 years. And you just run the old calculator, and it shows you, you know, surprise, surprise, the passive guy's ahead at the end of 5 years. And he's ahead at the end of 10 years. And he's ahead at the end of 15 years. But the amount he's ahead keeps declining. And at the end of 25 years, the valuation-informed indexer's ahead. And at the end of 30, he's far ahead. So the point of this calculator is to show people, if you become a valuation-informed indexer today, it's like voting your portfolio a 50% increase in value. Because every $100,000 you have to invest today is going to produce more than $150,000 in the hands of a passive investor. That's how big a difference this makes. To make this one little shift, that you're willing to look at valuations and passive investors aren't. That's how much a difference it makes. Whatever your portfolio is today, just add 50%. $150,000 is 50% bigger than $100,000. So if you have $10,000 today, make that shift, and you've got the equivalent of $15,000. If you've got $200,000 today, make that shift, and you've got the equivalent of $300,000. Whatever you do, whatever you have, make the shift to valuation-informed indexing, you've got a 50% increase. You won't get paid it in dollar terms until the end of 30 years, but all over that 30 years, you're going to be getting benefits, and it's going to accumulate, and the accumulation at the end of 30 years will be great enough to make up all the losses you suffered in the stock market. For many of us, we suffered different amounts, but you know, a 50% increase will do it for most of us. For a lot of us. But now I looked at it. I looked at these default results because the calculator is going to be going up pretty soon. And something bugged me. I was looking at it last night. And when you look at the results at 25, and the way the results are portrayed is we don't give one result. We give a range because that's the proper way to do it. You know, passives don't do it that way. They reduce it to one number, which... there's one selling point you could give for that idea. It's always wrong. So you never have to worry about anybody saying you're wrong because it's always wrong. See, the passives can never get anything wrong because the initial premise is wrong. The whole idea is wrong. So everything is wrong. So to point out that the passive got a number wrong is idiotic. This is what I didn't get when I started. I thought they'd be happy that I pointed out that the safe withdrawal rates get all the numbers wrong. But their idea is, why would you point that out? Everything in passive investing is wrong. The starting premise that it's a good idea to be passive is wrong. So it's all wrong. So we don't give one number. John and I, we don't give one number. We give a range. And so the way it works is we use color. We color code it. We do 1,000 tests. The calculator runs 1,000 tests, and the top 25%. Are a green bar, and then the next 25 through 50% are in blue, and then 50 through 75 are in yellow, and then 75 through 100 are in red. So you know, if I'm lucky, I'm going to get one of these greens or blues. If I'm unlucky, I'm going to get a yellow or a red. But there's a whole range of possibilities. And when you compare these two things, the 100,000 portfolio that's valuation informed and the 150,000 portfolio that's passive, the green, at the end of 30 years, the green result, valuation informed indexer is far, far higher. In other words, the potential of that portfolio, even though it starts out $50,000 less, is far greater on the upside. And that's what you would expect because it's rational. You're investing according to a rational strategy. You would expect it to be higher. But something troubled me. You look at the bottom and the red goes lower. And that sort of tripped me up. I'm like, well, that doesn't seem right. Obviously, there are good results and bad results you can get with valuation-informed indexing. There's a range, so I understand that the worst results are not going to be that great. But the worst results for passive aren't going to be that great. Why are the worst results for valuation-informed indexing lower than the worst results for passive? That doesn't seem right, because that suggests that the risk of valuation-informed is greater than the risk. When you see a low result, what you're really seeing is riskiness. You know, a worst-case scenario. Why would the worst-case scenario for valuation-informed indexing at the end of 30 years be worse than the worst-case scenario for passive? That tripped me up, and I'm saying, is there something wrong with this calculator? Is there something wrong with the idea? You know, are the goons right? It doesn't seem right. And I'm the guy who thought the damn thing up with the help of thousands of community members, please. But, you know, I'm the one who wrote it down. Let's say it that way. I'm the one who wrote it down. So I puzzled over it, you know? And I woke up this morning with the answer. And it's so obvious. It's stupid. We're all stupid. We're all idiots, babe. It's going to become one of my sayings. We're all idiots, babe. It's a wonder we can even feed ourselves. Why is the red bar for valuation-informed indexing lower than the red bar for passive at the end of 30 years? It's because we started, the valuation-informed portfolio started with $50,000 less. It started with such a handicap that it, in a worst case scenario, it can't make up that handicap. So it's, in other words, the odds are, if you take the midpoint, if you take the midpoint, the most likely result, the most likely result for valuation informed at the end of 30 years is higher than the midpoint for passive, even though passive started with 50,000 more. The midpoint, the most likely scenario, is more likely, is higher, better. So passive is clearly superior, that it could make up a $50,000 loss plus. But in a worst-case scenario, you know, let's just say a worst-case scenario for valuation informed is it does no better than passive. But, you know, say if everything goes wrong, we get these totally bizarro return sequences, and it's one of those 1 in 10 shots where the passives do as well as the valuation informed. And that does happen. I've used the calculators enough to know there are scenarios where that can happen. So say that happens. Well, if that happens, the 50,000 candy cap that we started with is going to cause the result for passive to actually be a little better. In other words, in a worst case scenario, valuation informed can't make up the $50,000 difference. That's why the red bar goes lower. Now, my point here is, This shouldn't have stumped me. It makes me sound dumb to even tell the story. That's good. I want to make me sound dumb because I don't want people thinking I'm some know-it-all that's giving them all this brilliant advice. I think it's idiotic. I think this all passive investing is boastfulness and pride and stuck-upness and pomposity and hot air. And I'm repelled by it. And I want guardrails against that. Rational ideas to avoid all that junk. It's that junk that's killing us. Because you can't go on television and tell the truth about stock investing, because all the people who have been promoting junk, not because they're bad people, not because they're dumb people, because they're idiots, babe. We're all idiots. And they are too. And so you can't go on television and tell the truth because it upsets the idiots. So they cancel your show. And I want us to get past that. I want us all to admit we're idiots so that we can all go forward and not be such idiots. But the point there is, if you really want to know the answer to your question, you've noticed I haven't answered the question, have I? You know, what allocation should you be at a 12? Well, the answer to the question is, you got to soak in what it means to be a rational investor. And when you soak it in, you'll have a feeling about what the right thing is to do. And it's not all that complicated. You walk up to the girl and you ask her to dance, or you walk up to the girl and you ask her to coffee. It's not that big a deal. And sometimes she really does say no. Most of the time she says yes. In worst case scenario, she laughs in your face. It's been known to happen. It doesn't happen often. And if it's a worst-case scenario, you know what? She's the idiot, not you. She's got bigger... You're a 16-year-old boy that's socially inept, and that's not the greatest thing in the world to be. But if a 16-year-old girl that you ask to dance laughs at you, she's got bigger problems than you do. Fact. So you get through. But the point is, you got to stop thinking it's such a big deal to get rejected. You got to stop thinking it's such a big deal to not get the perfect stock allocation. You don't have to get it perfect. The passives want you to think it always has to be perfect. That's why they want to reduce it to a number. It's all fear. It's all insecurity. You've got to give up that idea and say, hey, I don't know perfectly. Maybe today I should be at 50%. Maybe I should be at 60%. I don't have to get it perfect. I know darn well that I shouldn't have been at 60 before the crash. I'm smart enough to know that much. I'm 10 steps ahead of the passives. That's the way you want to think about this stuff. So it's a way of thinking. You know. So what they do in that thread, I'm going to have to wrap up, but what they do in that thread is they play these games. The one guy says, oh, Hocus is right. And they all get insecure. And then they say, oh, but we didn't count taxes. We got to count taxes. We got to count transaction costs. These are fantasies. There aren't added taxes when you invest in a rational way. There are less taxes. There are less transaction fees. Passives say you have to rebalance every year. That means you have a transaction every year. From 75 through 2008 is 34 years. There was only a need for two transactions in all that time. How many transactions do you think the passives had? There's less taxes when you invest rationally. There's less transaction cost. They've got it all wrong. And you know the biggest mistake they make? This one is just unreal how big it is. I don't know how to calculate it, but it's huge. We can't calculate it because we don't have the data we need. Here's the huge one. When they do this chart, the guy there on that thread has a chart, and it's got, you know, lines, and it shows how buy and hold does over time and how valuation-informed indexing does. And valuation-informed indexing consistently beats buy and hold. That in itself should be a conversation stopper. They should say, wait a minute, call all the books back. Books are wrong. We got to fix them. We got it wrong. But they don't do that. What they do is they go into excuse mode. How can we justify the gibberish we've been pumping out for 30 years? Oh, my taxes must be higher. Transaction costs must be higher. It's not true, but they assume it, and then they'll pull the line down. They'll say, oh, we got to lower the line. That's all gibberish. It's not even true. The taxes are lower when you invest rationally, not higher. Transaction costs are lower. But here's then they didn't count. Somebody pointed out they didn't count the recent stock crash. Well, that, of course, keeps the line. And somebody else pointed out, in other words, if you count the crash, that numbers, the difference between those two lines is going to get bigger. The edge to valuation-informed indexing is going to get larger as you incorporate more real data into it. The more you consider this realistically, the more benefits you see from rational investing. But you have to get out of excuse mode. The biggest one, this one is huge, is how many, you know, when they do buy and hold, what they're doing is they're assuming, please note the verb, assuming that the quote-unquote buy-and-hold investors are going to stay at their allocation through their whole lifetime. That's the line that they get, which is lower than the line for valuation-informed indexing, assumes that the buy-and-holds never sell. How realistic do you think that is? How many passives do you think there are today who either haven't sold or aren't thinking of selling? Taylor Larimore sold everything. The author of The Boglehead's Guide to Investing, he said he had plan B his whole life. He never told anybody about it, but he always planned to sell everything in a stock crash. He just never told anybody. Bill Bengen sold everything for his clients. He's the author of one of the old school studies. How many others do you think are selling today? And how many do you think are going to sell if we have a 50% price drop, which is a real live possibility? How many do you think are going to sell then? Buy and hold causes you to sell in crashes. Why? Because it always leaves you overexposed when prices are insane. And insane prices always lead to crashes. So this assumption that the buy and holds are going to hold through the whole thing is idiocy. It's complete, total idiocy. The whole point of valuation-informed indexing is it's an approach to long-term investing that works. You don't have to sell. When you're at a reasonable allocation, you don't go through this boom and bust cycle. You're not crushed. And when you're not crushed, you don't have to sell. So it's an approach to buy and hold that actually works. Calculate that in and see where your lines go. The line for valuation-informed indexing is going to be miles on top of the line for buy and hold, the conventional buy and hold. But they don't want to look at those kind of lines. Now, to get that kind of line, we've got to have data that shows when people sell, and we don't have that. But how do I know they're selling? The PE10 level dropped from 29 down to 12. How do you think that happens? It can't happen unless massive amounts of people sell stocks. So I know darn well they're selling. So why assume otherwise? All of the charts that are produced by the defenders of passive investing are wrong. They're all based on phony BS assumptions. They all get it wrong. So I'll just real quickly say where you should be at a P10. We're at a P10 of 12 today. Where should we be? Well, if you use the calculators, what you'll see is that a P10 of 12 produces wonderful results in the long term, 10 years out. So if you have been at a zero stock allocation when prices were insane, you could go with 80% stocks today. And I think the odds are you're going to do fine in 10 years. But if you're a passive investor, I would recommend you go to zero stocks and learn the ABCs of investing. Learn why passive can never work. And then after you've learned the ABCs, then get back into stocks. You shouldn't be in stocks if you don't understand the ABCs. And the first rule of stock investing is that valuations are 70% of the game. You can't do it without looking at valuations. And passive teaches you to ignore valuations. So you've got to get all the ideas you've heard for the past 30 years out of your head to get back to the first step. When you get back to the first step, I'm sure you're a smart person. And you can learn what you need to learn. But you can't get anywhere until you do that. So 0% for passives. I wouldn't, 80% can work for rationals, but I recommend maybe 50 because we went to the most insane price levels we've ever seen. And so we're probably going to see the lowest prices ever seen, which means a big drop from here. And so while you want to be covered in case there isn't a big drop, you don't want to put all your money into stocks until we see more of a drop. So 50%, maybe 60%, I think makes sense for the typical middle-class investor today. And something I told my friends when I met with them this weekend, and they were asking this question, I said, look, please understand that if I tell you to go to 50% or 60%, we may see a 50% drop. Please understand that. That's just part of the game. It's short-term. It doesn't matter. And please understand that if we don't see a 50% drop in the next year or two, that doesn't mean we're not going to see it. What I'm afraid of is a lot of people are going to say we don't see a 50% drop over the next couple of years, and they're going to get back in, and they're going to go back with passive, and they're going to go back with high allocations, and then we're going to see a huge price drop, and that's going to hurt even more than this one. The first step to effective investing is understanding how the game works. And that means rational, not passive. That means understanding that valuations matter. You must change your stock allocation in response to big price changes. You must. And if you get that, all the rest will follow. And you won't even have to go to Rob Bennett to figure out what allocation to be at. You'll know yourself. Or at least you'll know roughly. And that's really all you need to know. Stocks offer such a great value proposition that if you know roughly what works, you'll do fine in the long run. If you're passive, you're doomed. I don't think there's any hope for you. That sounds hard. That's what I believe. I think my job is to say what I truly believe. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.